Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Alejandro Larios Mora is a PhD pathology resident at Iowa State University's College of Veterinary Medicine. And the story of how he got to this point is pretty incredible. He grew up mostly in California, but he was born in Mexico, a fact he didn't learn until he was a teenager. He is one of approximately 1.8 million immigrants to the United States who were brought here as children. He's a DACA recipient who now has permanent residency. He's a dreamer. And the obstacles he's had to overcome to pursue his education have been daunting and would have been impossible to overcome without the guidance and kindness of mentors. And he is here with me now. Hello, Alejandro. On the phone line with us. Hi, Alejandro. I'm sorry, we had a little technical problem there. It's nice to talk to you.
Yes, thank you for inviting me to the show. I just wanted to make a few corrections in the introduction you had. I'm not a resident or a veterinary pathologist. Actually, this in late December, I graduated with my PhD, and I'm a board-certified veterinary pathologist. So the residency part, I'm already done with.
Okay, I'm sorry about that, and congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Well, let's talk about your story, because you grew up mostly in Anaheim, California, and school was not your thing when you were growing up. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with school.
I'll tell you this. Since I stepped foot into, I guess, kindergarten, I was a troublemaker. I don't know why, but I used to just like being a troublemaker, so that went on from kindergarten all the way to high school. It was a surprise to my parents when I told them that I was in the jeopardy list for graduation. I was in complete shock, and somehow or another, I ended up graduating high school. So I was never interested in school. I do remember some of the teachers that really tried to reach out. One of them was a science teacher in my seventh grade, where I got introduced to the microscope, and I was really fascinated to see another world under the microscope, the plant cell, the animal cell. So, so there were some classes like biology, also that I took in high school that had my interest, but for the most part, I was never in school, and I just really didn't care for it, and I didn't grow up in a family where education was valued, and then I also grew up in a really bad neighborhood where, no one was talking about, going to college or, how well they're doing in school or none of that. So I really didn't have no interest in continuing with school.
So I mentioned that you didn't find out that you had not been born in the United States until you were a teenager. Do you remember when you found out?
Well, the whole time, it's funny because, I was born in Mexico, and then my family moved to Hawaii, and then from Hawaii, we came over here to the United States, and I believe I was three. So the whole time I had been living in Anaheim, California, and I just, like anybody else, I didn't think there was going to be any problems in the future due to my immigration status. So I thought I would have the same rights, same opportunities as anybody else. Living in California, but that quickly was, turned on its head when I wanted to work, and I found out that I couldn't work, and that was somewhere in the ninth grade.
All right, so you couldn't get a driver's license, you couldn't get a job, and school had not been your thing, and your father had applied for permanent residency for you. It was sort of hung up for years and years. Did that actually push you toward getting a higher education?
No, it's very interesting because, just growing up, like I said, in a bad neighborhood and seeing the opportunities of, what were opportunities with my immigration status and everything, I just didn't want that. I didn't want to work in a factory. I didn't want to work construction. I wanted a different life, but it's very difficult, surely, when you grow up in these type of environments, to look past of what you can only see when you step out your door. And when you step outside and all you see is negativity, and you have negativity around you, it's hard to think that you could do anything else, especially when there's no mentors around you. So there's a lot of, roadblocks of, you know, having someone like myself, you know, being able to think outside of, you know, actually doing something with your life, that you actually have the potential to, you know, go to college and, you know, pursue, you know, higher education like I did. So it wasn't easy for sure.
Yeah. You went to community college, and when you went to community college, you found pretty quickly that you had a lot of makeup work to do to really get the education that you didn't get when you were in high school, right?
That's true. Believe it or not, I took a placement test when I started at a community college, and I was so low. I mean, you have to understand that the first classes that I took were adding numbers and learning how to put a sentence together. I mean, that's how far back I was, and that's because I was just never in school, so I had to deal with that. That was a really big obstacle for me because, I mean, you know, when you're in college, you know, people ask you what classes you're taking. How do you explain to somebody else that you're adding numbers at age, I don't know, about 20 or 21, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a big hurdle just to get over that confidence or insecurity of, you know, doing stupid.
Well, and I can just, maybe I can't even imagine how discouraging that must have been. Plus, it was expensive. Even though community college is affordable, it's expensive to pursue an education. What kept you going, given that you had grown up in this neighborhood? You didn't have the role models.
That's a really good question. What kept going was that, maybe it wasn't at that time, maybe that happened later. I had a mentor by the name of Lupe Gutierrez. But in the beginning, it was just me by myself. My family didn't understand nothing about going to school or the challenge that I was facing. The amount of money at that time, someone was paying a resident, a permanent resident or a citizen of the U.S. was paying $11 a unit. I had to come up with $200 a unit. So if I wanted to take a biology class, that was 5 units, was $1,000. And for my dad, it was a lot of money. So in the beginning, I only took one or two classes. But what actually kept me going was that I did not want the life that my dad had as far as, you know, working construction. He was an iron worker, and he had several accidents doing that job. The last accident, he had an I-beam fell on him and just crushed him. He actually survived that accident. But it was things like that that in living in a bad neighborhood, that I just was not going to settle for that type of life.
As you pursued your education and kept persevering, when did the idea of becoming a veterinarian come to you?
So I always had. So I grew up with a bunch of animals, that, you know, cats, turtles, fish, dogs, and everything, you know, pet you can imagine. So I always had an interest in animals, and then I got, like I told you, I got introduced into the microscope when I was in 10th grade, and then I always had a passion for wanting to help people. So the combination of those three things, I knew around when I went to, I think, my second year of community college, I knew what I wanted to do, that I wanted to become a veterinarian. And then when I heard about veterinary pathology when I was in college, I knew that that was for me.
Did you tell people about this dream? I'm curious about what kind of reactions you got.
That's another interesting question, because you have to understand that from what I've told you about, you know, how, the sort of that how far behind I was in school, to talk about dreams to anybody else, especially people that knew me, was kind of silly and embarrassing for me, because they would think, like, Alejandro's going to think he's going to go to college and graduate. Like, my friends thought it was a joke. Not that they were, you know, they all had kids at a very young age and didn't go to school and everything else. And, you know, they thought it was silly that I was going to college. So, no, I just kept it to myself. My counselor at Fullerton Community College, counselor named Karen McGlynn, actually was someone that was very inspirational and pushed me to continue my education. But yes, it was not something that I talked about, because I didn't really have, I guess, a reputation for someone that was into school or had dreams or was going to go anywhere in life. But I sort of just, it was just kept it to myself.
You worked your way through community college. You went to California Polytechnic University. What brought you to Iowa? When did you learn about Iowa State, and how did that happen?
So when I was applying to veterinary school, I was interested in becoming a veterinary pathologist and also doing a PhD. And I just looked up at the school that had the best program for veterinary pathology. And at that time, Iowa State was ranked second in the nation for having a good veterinary pathology program. And that's why I found that Iowa, I didn't know that Iowa had a vet school. I didn't even know where Iowa was, to be honest with you. And I applied to Iowa, and they gave me a scholarship to come over here for veterinary school.
Now, at the same time, of course, we've heard a lot about DACA in the news. We've heard a lot about people struggling with having been brought here as children and not having documented status. Did that nearly derail your education?
Yes, because, you know, I was very fortunate. I just barely qualified because there's an age limit. There's a date that was given that, you know, after this date, you could apply to DACA, and then there's also a cap that they put on the age. So I just barely made that cap or that range of age that, where you could apply to DACA, and that was very, that benefited me a lot. But in the beginning, when I first started going to community college, there was none of that. There's no help. But when DACA got passed and I applied to it, I was just I was just starting my first year doing my PhD in veterinary pathology training. And, I actually couldn't pay me because I wasn't allowed to work. I didn't have a work permit or anything like that. So it came at a good time where, I was able to finally get a paycheck.
There was a point pursuing your education here at Iowa State where you thought that you would have to leave. What happened?
Yes, there were several instances. You have to understand that something sort of has been a miracle because, I got accepted. I applied to only to 5 veterinary schools. I got one acceptance, and then I got some other ones where they wanted me to take the GRE. But anyways, it's all this money, to come to Iowa for veterinary school, the scholarship that I was given, even though there was a lot of money, the scholarship is given and the money sort of allocated for each semester, and you can't get money from another semester allocated to when you need the money. When I came over here, my dad got this like only one-time loan because I couldn't take out loans due to my immigration status. And, I get over here, and then, after that one-time loan was gone, that only covered 1 year. So for the second year, third year, and fourth year or each semester, I had to go through that process of, I don't know where this money was going to come from. You have to understand that veterinary school at that time, I think it was $40,000 or more per year. So just imagine, no financial aid, no scholarships besides the scholarship that I had, which later they took away because it was state and federal money where that scholarship money was coming from. And we found out that I couldn't receive it. So that was taken away, and then it was given, I think, back in my third or fourth year. So it was very, very challenging to be in school, especially in professional school, and be having that over your head of not knowing if you're going to stay or leave. And to think that I had to come up with that much money each semester was a lot of pressure. So I told the university like 2 or 3 times that I was going to leave. And the last time, I told them that I was going to leave. I talked to the people in administration. And then I was walking out after I had said that I was going to leave. And the dean comes in, and she asked me, her name is Dr. Nolan, Lisa Nolan. She asked me, how are things, and I told her what was going on. And she made it happen. I ended up getting the scholarship back. And I had a lot of people from faculty to my church to my American parents, Bruce and Barbara Munson, that have been very instrumental in, helping me achieve my dream of, becoming a veterinarian.
You received your PhD last December, December of 2017. Mm-hmm. How old are you now?
I'm 36.
36. So really, this whole journey, post-high school, pursuing this educational goal has been about 18 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I started from the bottom, like I told you, from adding numbers to putting sentences together to, being a veterinarian, having a PhD, and also being a board-certified veterinary pathologist.
What do you want people to take away from your story, your experience? I mean, at this moment in time when we have such politically charged conversations about immigrants to the United States and opportunity in the United States, what do you want people to know?
I would like people to know that, the people, the dreamers that are here, that they would like them to hear my story, that it's brief over the radio, and hopefully change minds and hearts about their feelings towards dreamers. And we are hardworking. We're here to be lawful citizens, respecting the law and being productive here, citizens of the U.S.
You have achieved your dream of becoming a veterinary pathologist. What is your favorite thing about your job these days?
I like the serving part. I love that I can serve others and help others through my education. I think that, the job that I have now, that's something that has that I really enjoy, being able to serve others.
Well, Alejandro, thank you so much for talking with me today.
No, well, thank you.
Dr. Alejandro Larios Mora, he is a veterinary anatomic pathologist at Iowa State University in the veterinary college there. He completed his PhD in December of 2017. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. The program is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Caitlin Harrop. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. And we had production assistance today from Shirley Wong. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbie.